Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're going to turn our attention now to the quest for affordable housing. You know, many times we talk about affordable housing, we only talk about the cost of renting. Today we'll talk about another path to help families find housing that they can afford with our next guest, Valerie Rink. Valerie's the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Dane County. And the organization focuses on home ownership rather than rentals. And we'll find out more about the Habitat model, how the community is involved, and why home ownership makes a difference. And certainly we'd love to hear from you as we talk with Valerie. Have you volunteered for Habitat? What was your experience like? Have you been the recipient of a Habitat for Humanity home? Join in. You can call us at 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And Valerie Rink, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me, Larry.
How'd you get involved in Habitat for Humanity?
Well, I'm almost embarrassed to say that I just saw a job open. But maybe the better answer is that it's sort of a long path that my career has taken in the nonprofit world about just helping people. So it's sort of a longer goal of, you know, credit. A lot of people think that Habitat is all about building houses, and of course that's an important part of it. But what they don't know is that I call the secret sauce that they get. Homeowners pay full price for that house. Everybody thinks, oh, we give away houses. No, they pay full price. The thing that makes it work is the 0% loan. So a lot of what we do is the lending part of Habitat.
So that's that is something that I'm sure a lot of people aren't familiar with. Maybe we should talk about the history of the organization, how it got started and so forth.
Well, of course, like everything, that's a long story. I like to call it the hippie commune. Millard Fuller is the founder, not Jimmy Carter. Jimmy made it famous, but Millard and Linda Fuller started it. And it's kind of a neat story in that he was a super busy executive working all the time. And Linda came home one day and said to him, you know what? You're never here. You're not present for our family. I think we should break up. And he said, oh my gosh, no, let's not do that. And so what they did was they put their money in trust. And they went, he said, if I do that, will you stay with me? And she said, okay. They were a very, very religious couple, and so a minister helped them. And they went down to Africa, and they built houses in Africa and did some other good things and traveled around. And then they came back to the U.S. as their kids got a little older and were going to be in school. And they ended up in what I call the hippie commune in rural Georgia. And they were there, and it just so happened at that time the leader of the commune actually died. And this was a really interesting commune, Larry. They were raising fruits and vegetables, selling them in roadside stands. But this was not people from Georgia. This was people from, you know, New York, Boston. They were there because it was a racially integrated commune, black and white people, and they were paying them the same wage. Well, what do you think in the 60s the rural Georgians thought about that? They didn't like it. They were bombing them. They were, you know, just treating those kids that were going to the local schools terribly. So it was through this really divisive time when the Fullers got there that this leader died. And so all the people looked to them and said, well, what are we going to do? They didn't know what to do with themselves without their leader. And so Millard and Linda said, let's build houses. We know how to do that. So they built houses for the poor people in this rural area of Georgia just to kind of keep, you know, give them something to do, a focus. And that was how Habitat for Humanity started.
Oh, and it's spread now. Talk about where it is now in terms of reach.
So it's set up kind of like a franchise is kind of how I explain it. So there's the international headquarters there in Georgia. Now it's in Atlanta. So, for example, here in Dane County, you know, I like to kind of compare it to McDonald's, right? So they hold the franchise, and we have an agreement with them that we will build houses kind of in the way they tell us to do it, and we'll run business the way they tell us to use the brand name and do things in a good way and follow the loans the way they like to do the loans. But we're really kind of a separate little, business right here in Dane County. And there's, 1,500 of those around the country, and there's 70 countries that are also independent affiliates. For example, we work with Habitat El Salvador and have a partnership with them. So we have affiliates all around the world, and the idea is to show how we, want to help other people by building homes. And yeah. We also do some other things, too, but it's really about helping build stability for families and stability for communities through home ownership all over the world.
I'm thinking about what's contributed to making home ownership so difficult for some people. It's cost and interest, but what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think, Larry, the biggest thing, people are not the homeless. They're the hardworking people that, are making enough money that they can make their rent, right? They're already renters. They can make a monthly payment. The biggest barrier to home ownership for low-income people, people of modest means, is that down payment. 80% of people today are living paycheck to paycheck. 70% have less than $1,000 in savings. So in Madison, a starter home is about $200,000. So even if you can get a 10% down payment, not much, I'm not even talking 20%, but if you can find a bank or financial institution that will give you a loan with a 10% down payment, that's $20,000. How many people living paycheck to paycheck can come up with $20,000 without, support from payments? And especially have that parental support or that deep savings to come up with a $20,000 or a $40,000 down payment. So that's what we see as the biggest barrier, is coming up with that down payment.
Yeah. How's Habitat funded? Speaking about funding.
We have three big streams that help us with our work, because it is expensive. So number one is the payments from past homeowners. So remember I said the our homeowners pay full price for their home, but we make it affordable through a 6% loan. Well, so they're paying on those loans for 30 years, generally. And then sometimes we speed that up. We'll take some of those loans and sell them to financial institutions in the area so that we can get that money quicker up front, take a little haircut to get the money right away. So the loan payments, that's number one. Number two, donations, of course, right? People are pretty generous. We have companies that will come in and do a build day with us and make a donation, and individuals. We just did a holiday campaign with direct mail that people were very generous with. So donations, of course, is the biggest one. But really, the surprise a lot of people don't know about, and I didn't know about until I came to Habitat, are the two restores. So there's a store on the east side and a store on the west side where people will donate their new or gently used building materials. It can be tile. It can be furniture. It can be, crown molding, lighting fixtures. And, we were on track last year before COVID to gross $2 million from our two restores, which is great because it keeps that stuff out of the landfill, and then it finances our home building program. So those are the
three. And, it's interesting. I was thinking about that because I live over on the east side of Madison, and I've often donated to the restores, but at the same time, I've also made purchases from the from the restores because it's a relatively good deal.
It's fun. We used to have a board member who was one of the architects who would oversee UW building projects, and mm-hmm. she was in charge of the renovation at Trip Hall, the union.
Yeah.
And she got them to donate us the old disco ball that came out. I think it was Trip Hall that had a disco ball, and that was a big fun thing to sell. So we get some really fun things like that every once in a while, too, besides the basics, doors and windows and those kinds of things.
So some people are wondering, I had a question on this, why Habitat advocates for home ownership and not just affordable rentals?
Well, usually you have to start out with a rental op- but they're stable. So we need both out there, obviously. Housing is a continuum. First, you need to have, a rental to get some practice, show that you can, make sure you've got a good stable history. But there's a time when, you're ready to move up to home ownership. And why that's important is several reasons, especially if you have children. It's about stability, Larry. I mean, there are studies both nationally and locally that show if you own your own home, you are more likely to get involved in the community, right? Because you know you're going to stay there. Children are more likely to get good grades, stay in school, go on to college. And we think that's because they know they have a safe, secure place to come home and study in the quiet where they can get their studies done. They're not moving from year to year. A lot of the families that come to us say, it's because our rent kept rising, we moved every year. Our kids had to make new friends. They didn't have anybody to ride with on the school bus. Now that they're in their home, they can have stable friendships. They can get better. They don't have to change schools. They don't have to switch if they have an IEP plan, if they're a special needs kid. So it really helps the kids do better and are more likely to go on to college and have better educations in the long run. But like I said, the parents do better, too. They're getting more involved in the communities, more likely to vote. They're even less likely to be a victim of crime. So it's about stability, which is good for the individual families. It's also good for the entire community, right? If I'm going to be watching your home because I know you, if I'm going to get more involved in the Community Homeownership Association or the PTA, that's good for the community as a whole. So when families are ready to move up to home ownership, that's good for everybody in the community.
Valerie Rank, our guest today, CEO of Habitat for Humanity in Dane County, and I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Tim and Marinette's online right now. Tim, I hope you'll hang on there. We're going to take a quick look at the news, weather. We'll find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Then we'll be back for Tim's comments and for yours as well. Again, join in. I'm Larry Mueller with Valerie Rank for the Ideas Network. Much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about Habitat for Humanity with the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Dane County, Valerie Rank. And I'm really glad to have her with us and glad to have you listening in. Would you like to know how to volunteer for the organization? What questions do you have about qualifying for a home? I hope you'll join in. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Tim on Marinette has been waiting a bit, so let's go there. Tim, hi. Thank you for calling.
Sure. I just wanted to start by saying that I've been a general contractor for 36 years now, and building a lot of homes. I've donated our time to some of these Habitat homes. We'll work with the crane operator to set trusses and work on the overhangs and stuff like that, just pro bono. And we also donate an awful lot of materials because we can't store it all, and a lot of it's new. And I think it's a really great program because it's not going to the landfill.
Yeah. Comment, Valerie.
Yeah, thank you, Tim, for doing that. All over the state, we have habitats that are building homes and doing repair projects, and we could not do it without volunteers, cash donors, and gift in kind donors. It really is a volunteer-driven model. We have, here in Dane County, not this year with COVID, but most years, we have 3,000 volunteers. They may come out to a construction site and pound a hammer. They may show up at the ReStore and price things and clean things up or cashier, or they may serve on one of our 17 different committees. So there are many different things we're doing all over the state and the world, as I said earlier, and it takes so many volunteers, but that's what's so great about it, right? Whatever your talent is, we can turn that into a home that helps a child do better in school, stabilize the community, and help a family do better.
Yep, Tim, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. What someone else wondered, how the home equity, or home ownership, excuse me, closes the equity gap that exists.
Yeah, that's a good point, Larry. There is a huge gap right now. In fact, according to the Urban Institute in D.C., that gap between Black and white families has not changed since the 60s, right? That's kind of sad that we haven't been able to do that. But home ownership is a really good way to help people of modest means improve their finances. In fact, I used to work in global microfinance. I used to travel all over the world helping people through small loans. And I love that I can do that now here in Dane County without having to travel and help people right here in my own community. And when I did that job, I used to talk and I used to put up a slide of former Atlanta mayor and U.S. Representative Andrew Young. Remember him?
Yeah.
He said, freedom doesn't mean anything without access to capital. And for most people, really for almost everybody, home ownership is really the only practical way to build capital, you know, no matter what your income level. For example, 67% of people own a primary residence, but only 50% of people have a retirement account. So especially, you know, if you're a person of color or an underserved person or a new American, you know, owning a home is really the easiest, simplest, practical way to build that asset, to help you gain stability so that you know you'll be able to put your kids through college, save for retirement. Home ownership is just traditionally, ever since looking way back, it's the easiest way to build that stability and build assets because it's so hard for most people to save. Expenses come, it's just really tough. That discipline of making a mortgage payment, that's going to be the easiest way to help people of color catch up and build some equity. So that's something that we're really promoting, that home ownership is a great way to help everybody save and build equity.
Let's talk about how families pay for their Habitat homes and sort of, you know, maybe what's required and so forth.
Well, so I mentioned earlier that the homeowners, they pay full price for their home because we don't want the neighbors to say, well, you're affecting our home value. So we have an independent third-party appraiser, just like, you know, when you and I bought our houses, that independent appraiser comes out and appraises the house. That's the price that they're charged for it. However, we make it affordable through a 0% loan, and we cap their payments at 28% of their income. So if the price of that house times 30 years times 28% of their income doesn't come up to the price of the house, then we'll give them two mortgages. And that second mortgage we call a silent or deferred mortgage, and it just sits there at 0%, doesn't, you know, cost them anything until they sell the house. And since about 93% of our homeowners are still in their homes, that usually happens when they pass away. So then, you know, the kids sell the home, and then that is paid back, and we use that second mortgage to help another family. So it's a great model that the homeowners are paying full price, but we know because we're capping their payments at 28% that they'll be able to make those payments, they won't get into trouble, and they'll be successful, but they'll still know, I paid full price, I'll take good care of it, they'll be able to have their family grow up there. But then down the road, that money will come back to help another family, what was ever over the 28%. So it's kind of complicated. They have more than one mortgage, but it's just a really neat model that nobody else out there has. They're paying full price, but it's 0% mortgage. So again, it's that loan that is the secret sauce that makes Habitat work.
Yeah, absolutely. You can join in, by the way, as we talk with our guest today, Valerie Rank, CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Dane County. She's been doing that since 2012, I believe. So she's got 10 years coming up here pretty quickly. Join in. The open lines get you on quickly at 1-800-642-1234 or email at ideas@wpr.org. Have you been involved in Habitat for Humanity in one way or another. Love to hear from you for sure. Well, wondering about selecting families. How do you choose families to help?
So there is a lot of folks, you know, that would qualify. So we have quarterly meetings. And in fact, one of my favorite stories about the quarterly meetings is I've done this a couple of times. We advertise, come and learn about what it takes to get a home. And we say the meetings start at 6. And somebody like me stands at the doorway, and at 6 o'clock, the door shuts. So there's always a couple of stragglers that arrive at 6:01, and they're like, oh, I'm here for the meeting. And me or somebody like me says, I'm sorry, the meeting has started. And they're like, lady, it's only 6:01. And we say, important information has begun to be imparted. You'll have to wait 3 months till the next meeting. And they're not too happy about that. But you know what? We don't want to make all the people who've been on time have to go through information twice. But we're also letting this group know, this is the way Habitat works. We run on time. When we say 6 o'clock, we expect you to be here at 6 o'clock. The trains run on time, and that's the way it is. So we set pretty high expectations for our families right up front, and they learn that. Now, they come into the meeting, and they hear all the requirements, right? Because we want our families to earn enough money that they can make their mortgage payments, but not so much money that they're not deserving of a little help. We like to say it's a hand up, not a handout. There's all sorts of requirements about, you know, the good rental history I talked about. We want them, again, to, you know, show them that they are good neighbors, that they're going to be a good brand ambassador for us. They'll help us by telling their story, doing radio interviews, things like this, so that we can get the word out and attract volunteers, attract donors. So there's a lot of things we ask of our families. We have to share their entire financial story. What do you get for income? You know, what do you have for, you know, debt? We're very concerned about, again, them making those mortgage payments. And we want that mortgage to be what the banking industry calls a qualified mortgage. We don't want more than a certain percentage of their income going to debt so that that mortgage is qualified to be resold on the secondary market. Remember I said before that we like to sell some of those mortgages to get more cash up front? So there's a host of requirements. So we go through all of this. And it's kind of funny, Larry, because our family services director will be sitting there saying, this is required, this is required. And we'll have like 70, 80 people in these meetings, and they just get up and start walking out. I make too much money. I don't make enough money. I have too much in outstanding debt, whatever. People just get up and leave when they realize they don't qualify. And we get done, we'll have maybe 20 people left in the room who think they qualify. So then they come in and meet with our family services staff and bring in their tax forms and their employer verifying their income. And, you know, it really works out about right that about the number of people apply for the 16 to 20 homes that we build a year. So even though a lot of people apply, when they hear they have to do 350 hours of sweat equity on their home, you know, frankly, that's asking a lot. And it's not just the work. It's that I can't go to my kids' basketball game. I can't go to the band concert because we've got to go out and spend all day Saturday for 9 months every Saturday working on the home. It's a big, big commitment they're putting in on that home. They have to go to 42 hours of classes. Financial capability classes, how to be a good neighbor, how to do home repair, how to take care of the lawn. It's tough. It's a really tough program. But, you know, like anything else in life, you get out of it what you put into it. So there's a lot that's required. There's a home visit. We send out some of our family committee members, and we look them in the eye, and we ask them, are you really willing to partner with us? We're not building this for you. We're building with you. It's a partnership. So it's really rigorous. It's really tough. But by the time we get, it might be a year and a half, 2 years when we get to the end where we have our what we call our home dedication. And we're standing there in their new home, Larry, and their whole extended family is there. And, you know, they're telling about what the process has meant to them and how it's going to help their family. Let me tell you, there are tears at every one of those. And it's just the most wonderful, wonderful thing. So it's pretty awesome.
That's a great story. Tom in Buffalo County has a comment or something to add here. Tom, hi.
Hello. Yes, I always thought there was a program, and you may have just talked about it while I was waiting, a program called Sweat Equity, where the prospective homeowner could work on the home themselves and help out and thereby gain some equity in the home. Mm-hmm. Is that a program you have or is it not?
Yes, so every Habitat does Sweat Equity, but, you know, each affiliate might administer it in a little different way. So in Dane County, if there's one mortgage holder, they are required to do 325 hours of work on their home or another home. If there's two mortgage holders, then they would do 375 hours of sweat equity. Now, that might vary. For example, Sauk County, the next county over, they used to do a USDA program that you had to do a lot more hours, but other family members could do that for you. So there's, you know, there's different variations on it, but right. So the idea is you're building equity in your home by putting hours into the building of it. But I think the more important thing is you're learning, right? If you're putting up drywall, if you're helping put in doors and hanging windows, isn't that great that you're learning? It helps you with home repair. It helps you with just meeting other people in the community is what we love about that too, right? When volunteers of all types mix with homeowners of all types and donors of all types, you're meeting people you might not have met otherwise. So it's learning about home repair. It's meeting other people in the community. And it's building equity in your home. It's all those things. So that's one of the things about the Habitat model that's kind of unique and is pretty wonderful also. So thanks for asking about that, Tom.
Yeah. So you don't necessarily, I mean, you're going to be gaining some skills, but you don't necessarily have to have a bunch of skills in hand in order to do this.
There's absolutely nothing required, especially as a volunteer. They let anybody, even me, Larry, who knows nothing. I'll tell you, we did a board build when I was pretty new, and I was out in Fitchburg building on a house, and I was a little, you know, self-conscious, and I'm hammering away with Deb Alton from Target Interiors, and I see Michael Baer. He's an investment guy. He was our board chairman right before that, and he's whispering with one of the construction supervisors, and they were looking at me, and I think he was saying, you should tell Valerie a better way to do that, and then the construction guy says real loudly, I never correct anyone on their hammering. And I'm like, oh, I guess he was going to correct me. He told him to correct me on my hammering. But you know what? Everybody's welcome. We need people to just sweep up. We need people to just carry things and put things away and bring them out. So a lot of construction work is very simple, very easy. So we have one paid supervisor on every work site. And their job is to assign work. You know, they'll ferret out who knows what they're doing, who's new, and they also make sure that all the safety protocols are followed. They're not doing the building. They're overseeing the volunteers who do the building, and they're doing quality control and safety control and kind of doing that. So we're really good about, we're really happy to have people with no building skill whatsoever. And if it's really bad, that paid construction guy goes back out one day a week and fixes it.
I'm thinking about electrical and I'm thinking about plumbing and it's all volunteers. You wonder, oh my goodness, is this going to all work? But apparently it does.
Well, actually those things are licensed. So plumbing and electrical does have to be done by a licensed contractor.
Okay.
concrete too.
I'd hate to have myself out there doing the electrical wiring for I think I had electricity in 4-H back when I was a kid, but that's been a long time, ago. How many homes has Habitat built in Wisconsin? Do you know? You guys build 15 or 20 a year, I guess, in Dane County.
In Dane County, we built 307. I couldn't tell you about Wisconsin without looking that up, but of course, it would be quite more than that. Milwaukee, you know, they've been doing a lot more than us, and the Fox Valley is also quite large. But then, you know, like Greene County is doing one a year. So it kind of varies from the ones that are all volunteer run, like Greene County, to the very large ones like Appleton area. They're quite large. But yeah, we're doing 50, we've done 307 in our lifetime since 1987, I believe we were founded here.
That's a lot of homes for a lot of families. Mm-hmm. Back to the volunteer opportunities. So the volunteer opportunities basically are coming and helping with building. Other volunteer opportunities as well, and how do you volunteer?
So we also need a lot of volunteers at the ReStore. So at the ReStore, they might be saying, here's a truckload of things that have been donated. They need to be cleaned up, put a price on them, move them out to the floor. We need cashiers at the ReStore, especially on Saturdays. We're very short of people. A lot of people don't want to volunteer on Saturdays. We have committee needs. So there's, you know, quite a variety of different things.
Some people want to come out, you know, with their Rotary Club or their church group as a group, and that's fine. Some people want to come out once. Some people want to come out in a recurring time. You know, we used to want everybody to come out multiple times, but now we kind of realize those days are over. We just take people at what they're offer, you know, able to give. So whether it's once or 10 times, we'll work with them.
Yeah, for sure. You also work with UW, don't you? Tell us about that.
Oh, my gosh. There are so many different ways we work with the university. We're lucky to really be in a university town. My favorite part about that is that we have a university chapter. So there is a UW chapter that we've given them actually a seat on the board. So there's every year a new university student that I get to work with, and they actually sponsor a house. So they do lots of activities and lots of educational things. So that's always kind of fun. You know, we get some interns from the university. We have a green team that helps our homeowners with their yards. And, of course, that's a lot of master gardeners. I know you're always talking to the master gardeners.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, just volunteers in general, right? One of my favorite ones is the retired public TV director. He loves to come over and drive the forklift at the Restore. That's his favorite thing. So you can do that, Larry, when you retire. We'll give you a forklift, too. But the newest thing that we're working on with the UW is financial capability training. So the biggest reason why people get turned down for Habitat Home is credit, right? In fact, that's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about with equity is, you know, why people don't get homes is usually, you know, they don't have money from their parents. They have bad credit, low incomes. That's another reason why there's a racial disparity in home ownership. So we are working, besides building homes, we also are working now more with the general public on financial capability training, which is, you know, basic budget, credit, all those basic things that we never learned growing up, right? There's a study from CUNA here in town that says people are more willing to talk to their kids about sex than they are about money. So we want to work on that. So we have partnered with the UW Center for Financial Capability, Deb Neubauer there on Park Street, to do classes, which, of course, are now all online, with different folks, the ones we turn down, and other people who are interested in home ownership, and just the general public on improving their financial capability or financial literacy, some people call it. But we also want to go a step farther and provide them a mentor. And this doesn't take a lot of special training. I mean, think about if you want to lose weight or quit smoking, you just need somebody to kind of remind you, hey, how's that going? Did you smoke last week? Did you exercise like we talked about? So when Deb's group gives them their training, they come out with a plan. Okay, I'm going to pay off this credit card, or I'm going to do, you know, buy QuickBooks or whatever. Then the mentor kind of just gets together with them for coffee once a month or over the phone and reminds them of their goals and, you know, just makes sure they don't forget about it. So that's what we're hoping will make it more successful is that we've given them a mentor. And now we're going to take that out and work with employers on that. You know, give us some of your folks that maybe need a little more coaching, your entry-level folks, your newer folks, and we'll work with employers on a program like that, too. So that's our next big step, and the UW is a big partner in that.
Well, Valerie, it has been a great pleasure to talk with you today about Habitat for Humanity. The website, again, habitatwisconsin.org. And if you want to volunteer,
habitatdane.org.
HabitatDane.org. Let's do it that way. If you want to volunteer, you can go to the website and do that. And Valerie, again, thank you so much. It's been a great pleasure talking with you. I hope we have a chance to talk again.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Valerie Rank, CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Dane County. It was great to have her with us, and we'll talk about Habitat for Humanity again on the show. Appreciate very much her being with us today. I did want to mention that you can join us for special coverage from NPR tonight at 5. The House of Representatives expected to begin debate on a resolution imploring Vice President Pence to take action under the 25th Amendment to declare President Trump unable to discharge the duties of his office. And tonight at 7, Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers will deliver the annual State of the State, and you can hear live coverage here on WPR. That's all tonight, starting at 5 on the Ideas Network, and of course at WPR.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll find out how ice fishing is going this winter at 11, and 11:45, we'll look at Eagles in Wisconsin. So we'll talk Eagle Days for this year. That's tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.